Hey there, Z Nation fans! Welcome to another episode of the Z Nation After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight we are talking about Season 4, Episode 3, The Vanishing. But don't you vanish, because we have a very special guest. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Gotta say, we were at a complete loss for what to pick for tonight's song, and Michelle came through
with a
fantastic recommendation.
Sort of works. I love this song.
For sure. Hello, Z Nation fans! Welcome back to another episode of the Z Nation After Show. Tonight we are talking about The Vanishing, probably one of the most atmospheric episodes this series has done. Let's not waste any time. Let me introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. You can follow me all over the social medias at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T.
To her left, Michelle Cullen.
Hello, everyone. You can find me on Twitter at Michelle_Cullen.
And to her left, our very, very special guest, the CEO of The Asylum and one of the producers of the show, David Michael Latt.
Hey, everyone. You can reach me at David M. Latt.
Forgot to throw in returning guest star champion as well.
Really?
Yes.
Champion?
Yes.
How's that?
We held a competition at the end. Twitter poll? Yeah, totally won.
Really?
No.
Oh. I was going to say, if we're going by sheer number of times that someone has been on this show, it might be Anastasia.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
It might also be Nat.
Nat or Anastasia. In
Nat's
terms of,
got
like,
quite a
number
few.
Of guest appearances.
Yes.
Maybe Carl or Abram, too. They've got quite a few under
Michael.
Their
ask me. I'll show Michael. Up. I live in the alley down
it's
the
not
street.
You.
I'm available, you know.
Well, you are welcome anytime, and we are so happy to have you.
Here for the water.
dangled this beautiful thing in front of him, and then you took it away.
I'm sorry.
Don't
that
make
was
promises you can't keep.
That was terrible.
Where is your mind?
I don't know. I keep looking off into the distance, and I see the destruction of the world.
And I hear zombie noises out in the forest, so I think I'm going to go chase them after this by myself.
I just keep staring out east. But also, guys, I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. We are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag ABTVZNation in case you guys have any questions for our fantastic guests or want to participate in the conversation. Katie's got you covered on the live chat. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Why not start there? Let's start with Warren, because she's kind of, as the song indicated, just kind of off in her own little world.
I like that we finally got to see what her little disconnects from reality look like from the outside. Because every time we're following her into this flaming hell and then snapping back into reality along with her. So it's nice to see it from the outside and her just kind of making gestures at things that aren't there. And everyone going, oh.
It is always fun when you have a character who is hallucinating or having some sort of vision. Getting it from from the other character's point of view of being like, because it creates this question of, is this character crazy or is this character actually seeing something that's real? And the answer is, we don't really know.
She's crazy. Oh, wait, I shouldn't say that.
Spoilers!
See, I'm going to assume seeing something that's real because we saw Dr. Happy, Dr. Sunshine, Dr. Guy whose name I cannot for the life of me remember.
Sunshine sounds right.
Yeah, it's something
Andy
like
Warhol
that. I think
glasses.
It's Sunshine, yes. Burning a zombie hand in the, I believe it was the season premiere, so I think everything being on fire is kind of a pretty good prediction.
I get a little worried because the person who told her to trust these visions and her instincts was a person who was fighting off becoming a zombie at the time. So I'm not sure if Dr. Teller was 100% reliable when he said, totally trust your visions.
But he also knew that he was becoming unreliable. Everyone else is just kind of like, I'm perfectly fine. Let me go murder someone with my 9 iron.
Michelle, thoughts?
It kind of makes me wonder if they did all of the experiments for what we ended up seeing in the season premiere, like right around Warren while she was in a coma and just commenting like, she's passed out. She's not going to know what's up. Now, will you hand me this thing so I can burn this hand up? And then just kind of planning subconsciously, like how else, how does she know?
I love that idea, actually. She's just, like, just absorbing like hospital hearsay.
She's in a pod. It's fine.
She's a coma sponge. She wakes up at the end. It's all a dream. All Z Nation.
She never woke up from
the
coma.
That was what I said in the first thing.
Yeah.
It did.
I don't think
it's real, but...
I still think it's entirely possible that this is all taking place in the mind of Citizen Z as the nuclear weapons are falling from the end of season
one.
That
would be the coolest twist ever.
No, so I think it's possible that it's taking place in a snow globe that a small child is looking into.
That's exactly what's going on.
There we go.
Oh, no, you've got that.
Now, for you guys, it must be, you know, obviously we don't want a definite answer, but it's probably really fun when you guys get to play around with the idea of an unreliable perspective. Because, again, she's not sure what the source of this is, and the rest of the team isn't really sure whether or not they should trust it either.
It, you know, I've seen the whole season, so I kind of know where everything is going. And it's one of those things of just going into it. You know, what's Carl going to do and Craig going to do? Those are the showrunners and the creators of the show. You know, making sure that everything plays into what these hallucinations are and trusting what's real, what isn't real. They do a fantastic job. And every script comes, you go, okay, you know, they nailed it. The biggest, the only real big thing that we wanted to make sure on the network and studio side was that Warren still is kick-ass.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we, you know, that, and Carl's, oh, of course it's going to, you know, in, you know, it's because you have this you know, this character that is hallucinating and doesn't necessarily and isn't fighting, you know, and so we just want to make sure that, well, look, she's a kick-ass character. Let's make sure she kicks ass. And
I mean, she was gonna punch a zombie in this episode. Yeah. She was ready.
Oh, you haven't seen nothing yet.
I'm sure.
Well, it also, talking about how, like, cool and badass all our characters are, we talked about it quite a bit last week, but the idea that, and we see it in detail, and we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to poor R.I.P. Henry Rollins. We'll talk about it a little bit more there. But, like, seeing the reality of, like, this is a seasoned group of zombie-fighting veterans, and to see them kind of at a loss for what to do is something that's as a viewer, it really is something that's very scary. Because, like, these are guys who take out zombies left and right, and then all of a sudden they are caught completely unawares of what to do when a headshot doesn't work anymore.
See, at one point they had a shovel, and I'm like, great, take the shovel, remove the head, and then it was used like this, and I'm like, no. Remove the head with the shovel. Guys.
But even that, you know, these are mad Z's. They're unkillable, and it's fantastic. You know, it's just and so it has to be just mush at the end. And even then, you might find something scattering around.
We've seen arms go on their own.
Yes,
Henry Rollins shot the crap out of the old sergeant's head. Like,
yeah,
when he fought that battle, like, he smushed it. It should have ended there. I was like, cool, no more head, no more problem. And then he gets up in the scene and I was like, oops.
oh dear. That's not good. I like what you had to say about unkillable zombies, because that's something new. And I can only imagine what it must be like in the writer's room and in the production office when somebody goes, hey, what if we removed headshots from working? Like, just the amount of maniacal laughter that must have just erupted out of the office.
Well, it's a challenge that they had to do in the writer's room because, you know, if you go season one, season two, and season three, you know, you had blends and you had all of a sudden the zombies became not such bad guys at the end of the day. And so what you wanted to do was we need to take it back to season one a little bit more and go, okay, let's make the zombies have to be bad guys. We need some bad guys in this show. They can't all be touchy-feely and blends and whatnot. And you had that in season three, but you needed to have that, you know, extra kind of push. And to their credit, they came up with the unkillable zombies. And it's, you couldn't get any badder than that. I mean, that's pretty badass.
I kind of like that, too, because last season dealt with a lot of moral ambiguity.
Yes.
Like, Murphy was being a cult leader, but at the same time, you could argue that he had very good intentions. Warren...
Well, you know what they say about the road to hell.
Warren also wanted to find a cure, but she crossed a lot of lines that, you know, previously I don't think she would have been willing to cross. But a lot of characters were just kind of at their limit at the end of last season, so there were a lot of shades of gray. So it's very interesting that... Not to use the word reset, like Zona's been doing, but it's kind of interesting that by making the zombies kind of unkillable, you sort of kind of reset that sort of like, oh, the zombies are the bad guy again. Right. We have a unified enemy once
more. One of the things that, you know, I enjoy reading the reviews are going on, you know, three episodes in, because they're all like, this is getting back to season one. And, you know, the team is on a quest, and it's a little bit away from trying these other... moral ambiguity stories and stuff, but you know, it to me, that's what the task was for season four, and they just handled it beautifully. I mean, the show just gets better and better. I want you to see the next episode, which I believe was directed by Keith Allen, who plays you know, Murphy. So and
saw that on Twitter. That's going to be so fun.
He's a great director. And not just from this, but, you know, early on, he actually directed a show that I produced, a movie, and it's a horror film and a phenomenal movie. So, I mean, he has that skill set, and he uses it a lot in the next episode, which is great.
Looking forward to it.
Nice.
I can't wait to show you.
Well, and I also kind of feel, you know how it's adapt to survive or you perish?
Adapt or die, yeah.
Adapt or die, thank you. Like, the zombies can sense something's coming, because I feel like this isn't the first time scientists have come from Zona to the mainland to do some stuff. So,
and we don't know what they're up to right now.
Oh, yeah.
So
we
so
don't know
kind
what's
of
happened
a,
the past 2 years.
A reset in that sense, too.
He does. Should we just, like, get you some popcorn so you can eat it and smile while
we
theorize loudly?
Well, you know, this should not be water, and then I'll tell you everything.
We do have a bar in the back.
We'll keep that in mind for next time.
Should have filled it up with the keg. Shoot, we missed out on an opportunity, you guys.
Oh, gosh.
So this Vanishing was directed by Alex Yellen, who is our cinematographer for the whole series. I mean, he steps in and out, you know, on occasion, but for the most part, he set the tone and the visual of
that
the whole thing.
Makes so much sense.
And he's directed a few during over the last few seasons, and he's great, and is written by John Hines, who has done some of my favorite episodes, you know, on the series. So it was just, it was a deadly combination of greatness on this.
Yeah, something that is very, it's integral anytime you do something horror related or oriented. If you don't have atmosphere, you've got nothing in terms of scares. And we know this show is a horror comedy, but this episode in particular was super atmospheric. It was very quiet, and it was very... This visual storytelling was fantastic.
Phenomenal.
Particularly with Henry Rollins' character story and Sergeant Lily. And let's go ahead and talk about them before we get to, like, Murphy and the rest of the gang. Let's talk about Henry Rollins and Sergeant Lily. And David, you said that you had a little bit of a story that you wanted to share.
There is. It's a sad story, but...
So this episode, I mean.
Well, Sergeant Lily came about... the character is the character. But the name came about because we had a super fan. She's a young girl. Her name was Lily. And she got very ill. She, you know, during the course of the show. And but it was a real quick illness. We sent shout-outs. We sent things. Big fan stuff. She did some interviews. She was, you know, always wearing the Z Nation hat. And she ultimately died. And as an honor to her... because she affected everybody in the show, we named the character after her. So you know, we love our fans, and we're nothing without our fans, people who watch the show, and she was a super fan, and we honor her by giving her a real kick-ass character, and Grayson does a phenomenal job just really being this kick-ass, no-nonsense, wonderful character. So, and we're going to see more of her, too.
All right.
That's fantastic.
That is a wonderful.
Yeah, where do you go from there?
I'm going to need a minute.
I am relieved that you say we're going to see a lot more of her, because that Henry Rollins got added to the show, and I was like, yay! And now he's gone.
I know.
And now you're like, no.
There's 10 more episodes.
Everyone's so surprised we got Henry in the show because he never says yes to anything. You know, he's very elusive. He does what he wants to do. You know, he's very particular about, you know, the projects he picks. And I think we've gone after him a bunch of times. And he's always said no. And this, he just absolutely want to do it. He loves the show. He's a fan of the show. And it just worked out in the schedule because he's a very busy man. And it was great. And, yeah, I want him in every episode. You know,
at this point, that would be a little worrying.
That would be scary.
At this point, it would be like part of him.
Parts? It's all good.
It's like the thing from Adam's Family. Just
yeah.
We've done that a few times.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mike on Twitter says that scene with Henry Rollins was epic. It felt like it never ended, and the imagery was so disturbing. Oh. I loved it. So yeah, I have to agree with that. He got some pretty fantastic action sequences in this episode. Not only in his fight with the zombie that ultimately killed him, but also with the gang. And this is what I was talking about earlier with, like, to see them very much at a loss when a headshot doesn't work. Like, they basically have to blow him apart limb by limb. I do have to ask, how did you guys, and I'm sure it's a combination of, like, green screen effect and practical, but, like, how did you blow off half
it's
of
crazy.
His head?
We really blew off his head.
He's a method
you know,
actor.
Now, yeah.
Oh, God.
That's why we only had him for a few days.
He's very dedicated.
Very dedicated.
Dead.
You know, you look at the...
Oh, no.
I laughed at that. Oh,
runs
man.
In the family, doesn't it?
Oh, I'm so disappointed in myself, but proud of you.
I'm laughing
We're
more than you laughed.
Are you surprised?
Okay,
you
know, bring it back.
I could probably post some behind the scenes shots of that because
oh, that'd
wears,
be lovely.
They put like a skull cap, a green skull cap,
yeah.
and helmet there, so they're able to track it and then just carve it out in the visual effects side of it.
That's so
it's
cool.
It's really, you know, and it just wouldn't have worked if it didn't look so damn cool.
Yeah.
But the visual effects team did a great job, and it's one of my favorite scenes. I mean, it's just, you know, it's shocking.
Yeah.
It's just shocking.
It's one of those.
I feel like one of the most fun things for an actor to do in this show is to play a character for a little while, die, and then get to be a zombie.
Yeah.
You make it fun to be killed off.
Well,
thank you.
Not only that, but like to get to be a zombie in such a like jaw-dropping scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because even though we knew prior to this that a headshot didn't work, it's a completely different thing to see half of somebody's entire skull get blown apart and then to see them still moving. Like, that raises so many questions.
That
it does.
Entire scene was so powerful. And I have to say, I love the new makeup for these unkillable zombies.
Yeah, the eyes.
That's what I noticed is that the eyes aren't blanked out. They still have pupils and irises.
They still have pupils and irises, and it's all right here. It's normal skin tone and just a terrifying mouth. And he kind of reminded me of the mummy sometimes when he was screaming.
But he's good at that.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, the still images that I have him are my. I posted something. This is my favorite picture of the whole season because it's of him just like in front of the camera or Warren just you know, and the whole jaw's back and the. The neck is crazy, and you're like, it's intense, and he's intense.
He's
so
fantastic.
He's dead.
Goodbye, Henry Rollins.
Oh, we hardly knew ye.
Yeah.
Which is such a bummer too, because like leading up to him being turned into a zombie, he was a very deep character. He was emotionally in touch you don't see that from the military type very often. In this or really other shows too, military types are very by the book, like, oh, we've got to do this, we've got to do this, very procedural. And this is a guy who's like, you look like you could use a hug.
I love that part of it. And, you know, I was even talking to Carl about it. It's like, that's one of my favorite parts. He goes, well, we were thinking about actually not having that sitting there. It was one of those 50-50 things. And I'm like, it's exactly his character, you know, and I'm so glad that the decision was made to keep it, you know, because I wanted to see more of that. Touchy-feely and yet very, you know,
authoritative.
Thank you, authoritative. Characters in the show. He's great. So
yeah, and just to be around anybody who, after so many years in the zombie apocalypse, could still be so positive,
right.
mm-hmm. and still be that in touch with their own emotions and sense of empathy, because that's something that gets killed off real quick in the apocalypse. So to have a character who is still so empathetic was very interesting, and I think it paints a very interesting picture about the relationship between him and Sergeant Lily, who is left behind now.
But I would say the mirror image is Warren, who's very empathetic, you know, and that's been her character. Murphy, not so much.
You know, Murphy's had to take several lessons in empathy, and even then he still gets failing marks most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so, but it's nice to see outside characters. Usually they're not, you know, they're, you know, just there for killing, you know. Yeah.
They're just there to be cannon fodder, but
I did Zombie love Richards. That we basically had Murphy summarize that, like, I've heard of that, like, we've done this more than once. It sounds great. We show up, and then by the time we leave, it's gone to hell. Like, you ever think that you might be the reason for that?
There's a common denominator.
There's a common denominator, and it's our little group of characters. But, admittedly, there were some of them that were going to hell anyway, and it was just bad timing. And there were some that actively went to hell because our characters
were there. But I appreciate that Carl and the writers acknowledge it and don't shy away from those, you know, what this series has been, and go and basically tell the audience, you know, this is our pattern, but we're going to break the pattern. You know, we acknowledge that the pattern is we go into it, we blow it up, we cause mayhem and destruction, and then we leave. We're going to break it up this time by acknowledging it. So it's, they, and it's done a few times, and it's like, okay, good. Glad we all know it.
We're going to go in there, leave all the structures intact, and vanish everybody. That'll be new. And it really is, because now we're like, did we get Roanoked? What the hell is going on?
Roanoked.
Okay, that's a good segue. Let's go ahead and use this opportunity to talk about the fact that everybody's disappeared.
And now Sun Mei is gone. We saw her there last episode.
I saw her here. You know, she was in the studio.
That's what happened. Everybody's
still gone.
There was just a dimensional wormhole that just led straight here to the AfterBuzz studio. You just take a step in the wrong direction, and poosh, you're here.
It's so weird. Like, we have the show every week, and people come on, and then they're never heard from again. It's just the oddest pattern.
It's the landform Bermuda Triangle.
You didn't tell me this beforehand.
It's going to be okay.
I mean, no, I don't think it is. Don't
I mean, you've been
like
on
once
the show.
For yes and twice for no.
You've been on the show before. Where did you go afterwards?
Yeah, I don't know.
You're hanging out with Amelia Earhart.
I've been here this whole time.
It went black, and then you just ended up back here. It's pretty like much. A time loop scenario. Oh,
that sounds terrifying, actually.
Oh, gosh. A Groundhog Day scenario. Ugh.
It's very unsettling that we got the scene last episode where everyone was gone and Sun Mei was there. Also, she did not check the camp thoroughly, unless it was a tradesy situation, because now she's gone, but Burgess is stuck in a closet.
To be fair, he shut himself in there.
He shut himself in there, and it was the room where she was sleeping. And so I think that, like,
he just made no noise.
He made
they didn't
no...
find him until they opened the cabinets
like
in there, and
from
she
aliens.
Didn't.
Anyone? Is this thing on?
This this girl hid from these things for weeks. Well, then put her in charge. But yeah, we get the scene, and I have to say, like, a good jump scare. Good jump scare finding this guy, because I could have sworn like he was going to be a zombie, but no, he jumped out, and we get nothing out of this guy. He is completely traumatized by whatever he saw. And here's the thing. He clearly saw something. I'm trying not to look at David right now because I don't...
I know
no spoilers, but...
He's got a good poker face.
He's got a very good poker face. But this guy saw whatever happened to the rest of the camp and had enough time to kind of escape it. Which, it makes me... Like, I was theorizing like some sort of trans-dimensional sort of thing, but that's not the implication here. This... And so,
that there was something in the camp.
Yeah.
And I think he just had that, he had a, probably had a fight or flight response and was close enough to the cabinet to just be like, nope, and lock himself in.
Yeah, and...
Because I don't know if he could get himself out, and that might have been why he didn't go.
I think, I might be making a leap here, but I kind of feel like he was really suspicious because Red kept going, "Oh yeah, everything's fine. You know, they're totally fine. They're on their way. They'll be back." He was suspicious, and he was already wary about like splitting up and everything to begin with, and so he, and you can definitely tell survival was this guy's like primary motivation, because staying on the move is what kept them alive. I think that's something along the lines of what he said. So I think he was already kind of suspicious, so he was hanging around where Sun and Red were, and that's when whatever came to camp, and he had enough time to just hop into the tent and hide and just barricade himself. I have no idea what he saw, and I don't even begin to know where I would start guessing.
Zombie Langoliers.
You know what that is.
You're better Stephen off King. Not knowing.
It's a Stephen King story.
And it's not one of the good Stephen King stories.
It is bonkers.
Ooh, there's this TV movie.
Michelle, do you have any thoughts? Because I'm very much at a loss.
I have absolutely no valid guess as to what could possibly be making the tree shake.
I'm sticking with zombie langoliers.
Because it just reminds me.
Might as well stay so far out in left field that everything else sounds sane.
It reminds me of the T-Rex in Jurassic Park, and that's not it. That's not it. I can tell.
David, do you have a guess?
Let's talk about Sharknado.
I mean, we did throw that out there, and we've seen zombie tornadoes. A tornado full of zombies could have come through the camp and just miraculously not torn everything apart.
We will find the answers out when we do the musical.
What?
Wouldn't that be nice?
You can't toy with my emotions like that.
I know the cast would love to do it, but there is no. Maybe season 5 we'll do a musical. How does that sound?
Do you promise?
You heard it here first.
AfterBuzz TV exclusive. I know
you wouldn't say The Walking Dead do that. No,
I know you're settle joking. For a TV movie musical of Z Nation.
I would totally even just settle for a musical sequence, like it's a dream sequence. I would take it.
Well, that
all of the burning zombies and Warren's nightmares start dancing. It's getting hot in here.
I feel like
so
it would
take
be
off all your skin.
I feel like it would be a Murphy dream if it's anyone's.
Yeah,
it's a good point.
I'm very much reminded of when Doc was telling Lucy the story last season about how her parents met. Like, I'm kind of picturing like Sarah being in the musical number now too. I think that would be fantastic. Sorry, you've given me this thing and I want it.
Me too. If Carl's watching, you know.
Carl. Come on. Okay, that's
my kingdom went to see Keith in a top hat and tails. Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey.
I'm sure that's perfect for him.
He went too beautiful at that. Let's talk about what's actually happening now.
Okay, sorry. I am so easily distracted when
that's
you
okay.
just I mean, throw in the musical.
I got you.
We have news and gossip and we have predictions. I feel like we need a wishful thinking section.
Like that. If you let us
into the
writer's
room. Like harp music that always is someone going into
it's
a dream
done and done.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this next season. It's done and done.
All right. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and bring it back to let's bring it back to the group. One thing that we had a few people on Twitter commenting about is this reunion between Murphy and Lucy. This is like the first time they've been since she was a baby that they've been on screen in like a non-hostage sort of situation for an extended period amount of time, and because he's so biologically different than how he was the last time they saw each other, she's mad for a number of reasons.
Oh,
and
yeah,
she's mad that they no longer have that connection, and she's also mad that he just generally speaking hasn't been around her entire life.
As a parent to a teenager, I can say that relationship is perfect, you know, and how it's played out.
But there's also,
you know,
that.
So she's blue, you know, that's the only difference.
But there's that added, it's a thing. I'm still stuck on like top hat and tails, you guys. There's that added layer of, oh, well, I don't have that anymore because I was cured. And saying, well, I was cured and I used to be like you is saying there's something wrong with you. Which is not the case, but let's be real. Murphy is not real good with empathy.
He's trying. you know, he's. I mean, the relationship that he has with his daughter in this episode and coming up ones, it's a trying relationship, and that dynamic playing out in the apocalypse is real unique and real fun to watch. You know, and trying to make the connections, not make the connections. And, you know, yeah, that's a teenager, so, and a parent.
Well, and you also have the added layer of, like, you know, one of the few things that he, like, genuinely cared about with all his heart, besides himself, was his daughter. He was trying his best in his own way to, like, because he thought the people around him at the time were planning on killing her. So, like, leaving her with another group of people who he could, in his mind, trust because he turned them into blends. Like, every step of the way, it's a thing that made sense, even though it made him an absentee parent. And
well, and then he thought she was dead because exactly. He didn't have that connection anymore.
He thought she was gone, and he had to sit there and mourn and move on. And then to find out after 2 years that she's still alive, like, that's a lot of information to process in a very short amount of time after a leisurely 2 years. It's been like not only is she alive, not only that, but like the place he's been staying at completely falls apart the second Warren wakes up from a coma, and his daughter's alive and he's left her out there unprotected. Like, that's a lot to process for a dad,
and for the actor too. I mean, and I think he finds the right tone. Keith does a great job finding that tone and really playing it very emotionally and vulnerably, which, you know, you haven't seen that part of him ever, you know, in the show. But he's capable of it, and it's brought out by this relationship with his daughter so well.
Yeah, seeing Keith, like, trying to make a connection with this person who's just not having it, it's such an interesting... It's so fun to watch him, like, I'm trying... Being a dad is hard.
Well, and he's watched his nice, idyllic little world fall apart over the span of 48 hours, maybe? So that's right. Pretty rough, because that's everything he could ever have wanted. And by the way, it's all going to hell.
Also, wouldn't she, in like, if she had aged normally, be 3 years old at this point?
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. That is not a ton of time at all.
She's a three-year-old teenager.
As most three-year-olds are.
I mean, yeah.
I was waiting for that.
Most three-year-olds are kind of prima donna. Just a little bit. But kind of a surprising thing, she doesn't have a connection with him, but she does have one with Warren. And that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Warren got some Murphy in her thanks to that bullet.
Mm-hmm. And then was in a coma for 2 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And her hair's different now.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. Took a little longer than I'm proud of to see it there. But now that I see it, I'm picking it up.
You think she's going to be blue real soon? Or?
No, I don't think she's going to be blue. I think it's just that little bit of Murphy blood.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was blonde for a little bit.
He had white hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good look for her, though. I like it.
I'm embarrassed that that together. I'm going to be very frank now.
I mean, to be honest, we didn't know because Zona was also the place that gave her a pedicure while she was in a coma. Could have just done her hair, too.
But even though, there's a scene in this episode toward the end where Lucy goes after Warren, and I sat there going, huh, their hair's the same color. Occurred in this brain. It's just like it's the same shade of wig.
You were too busy going, Henry Rollins.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
He was still alive at that point.
If
in the
it
episode.
Makes you feel better, there are plenty of times. If it makes you feel better, there have been plenty of times where a plot point has been staring me in the face and it's just gone whoosh. So
there
do
are
not feel bad.
I guess it's no surprise here, but I'll be watching on the broadcast, after seeing the rough cut, reading the scripts, every incarnation, seeing the dailies, and then seeing the broadcast version going, oh, that's what they meant.
You know, you're like, I got it. Oh, it all comes together.
They're zombies. I, oh,
don't know how I missed is that?
Boy, it's amazing what they did in post.
Well, that's true, too. There's a lot of that.
Can we talk about that a little bit? Because we
talked... What they do in post?
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's a lot of it this season, with the dream sequences in particular. Like, when do you, obviously this show relies a great deal on the practical effects. Was there, and visual, the post-production effects have always been a component as well, and they've always done a marvelous job. But I feel like with the shift to these otherworldly visions, I'm a little bit concerned about, like, the amount of CGI and post-production. Not that it's a bad thing, but I'm like, what, like, where, like, in terms of, like, is that something that the show is going to be relying a little bit more on? Because the practical effects have always been so good.
I think you'd be surprised at how many visual effects are in every episode.
That's how good it is, because
it's true.
you can't tell.
Just things that you don't notice because they play, you know, in a believable, authentic way. So,
it's seamless,
you know,
most of the time.
The dream stuff is going to be a little more out there, so a black rainbow and the crows and the manta and, you know, and all that stuff, you know, it's obviously CG. But some of the other stuff, you know, you'd be surprised that it was. So I don't necessarily know that our team has more than they're, you know, they normally have to do. I'm sure they're, you know, still working 24/7. You know, and all the stuff. I mean, there is a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm not going to die. But I don't know if it's more than usual. And I don't think we're necessarily relying on it more.
Okay, because, yeah, that was my thing, is that I forget how much the show actually does use CGI because it's integrated so well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just when you see a CGI flying mantis, you're like, that's a thing I don't normally see.
When you see
Z
any
Nation.
Zombies, and you're talking about the eyes, every zombie eye is CG.
Yeah, yep.
So, you know, I mean, it's every little bit. So.
Which is cool because, like, in first two seasons, I totally thought they were all contacts. Yeah.
That would have been the easy thing. No, you know.
I would imagine that would also hurt after doing it all day.
Yeah. I mean, cool. 12, 14-hour days. No, that would be terrible.
And I think they did it on a few hero zombies, and they were opaque, and you couldn't see it. It's just easier to do it in post at this point.
Yeah, let me run around and uneven everything and not be able to see.
That's workers' comp. Set happen. You in the woods, but I can't see.
You know, also just to peel the curtain back a little bit is, you know, we shoot the whole thing in Spokane, Washington, and this is a, you know, takes place all over the United States. So you talk about visual effects. I mean, there's so much in there just to kind of place them in the right place and in the right location and stuff. And this season, they definitely do the travel. They actually go reverse. They go back east. So, you know, they're doing a lot of traveling in the show as well, and you're relying on the visual effects.
Yeah, but Spokane's got a lot of different locations where you can be like, well, this looks like Kansas, and this looks a little more like...
Well, it looks like Zona.
This looks like Wyoming.
It's kind of incredible how the right location and then just a little bit of set dressing goes a long way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep, it's fantastic. I do think it is funny and that we spent like the majority of the series going west and now we're going to go east.
I kind of love that. I mean, what else are you supposed to do in the apocalypse? You find something that drives you and you go in that direction.
I really want to know if the cannibals are still in Pennsylvania.
I hope not.
Season one throwback.
Now,
the first episode in this series that really wrecked me.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and just put this out here now. So think about it, because when we get to predictions towards the end of the show, I'm going to ask everybody, so what do we think is out east? So think about that, and we'll talk about it when we get to predictions. I just don't want to blindside anybody when I ask.
Hopefully so. Season five.
All right, but yeah, let's. There's another component of this episode that I want to talk about, and that's Doc and 10K.
Yes,
because one of my favorite moments, just so far in the series, has just been this moment where Doc sees Murphy for the first time, and without any sense of anger, because I'm sitting here going, Murphy, you owe Doc an apology, because Doc has always stood up for you, always believed in you, and just without any prompting, just Doc goes and gives him a hug, and it's just like,
no.
And I was like, Murphy still owes you an apology, but that's what, but you're a fantastic character, and it's okay.
If Doc were to die, I don't know that I could keep watching. Like, I would eventually watch.
I wouldn't.
I would need to know what happens. But if Doc were to die...
Nobody has plot armor, but it's still just kind of like, but we need
I know. The other ones would break my heart and possibly make me cry, and I'd be like, okay, life goes on. But if Doc died...
He is a fan favorite. You know, when you do the surveys and the marketing and sci-fi, all that stuff. I mean, they all have at various levels. You know, everyone gets, you know, to the top of the mountain. But, you know, yeah, just on a personal level, just Russell, who plays Doc, is, you know, such... He is that guy. He's empathetic. Yeah. He's nice. He's sweet. He's smart. He's, you know, just giving and, you know, just couldn't ask for a nicer friend and actor and performer on that show. So, yes, I would not watch if Doc...
A much-needed source of optimism in the apocalypse.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But go ahead.
On the flip side, we have Mike New York from Twitter saying, did you notice that after 10K reunited with the group, he and Murphy never spoke to each other during the episode?
Yes,
can you blame him?
I was going to say, yeah, I feel like that was intentional.
Oh, yeah.
Any chance there was a scene on the cutting room floor where they make eye contact and then just kind of turn and walk away?
You know, I've given notes this season going, you know, 10K isn't talking a lot. You know, we need to give him a little bit more. And Carl's like, you know, no, it's that relationship needs to be preserved in that particular way for that moment, whatever that moment is in the script, because they have issues with each other. So
yeah, he's still
sore
about it.
And the sun is slightly warm.
Even 2 years later.
I mean, he was brainwashed and used by this guy who probably isn't going to be apologizing anytime soon. but... We also kind of do get this nice little bit of dramatic irony, too, because they don't know what's happened to Addie. They know she got shot in the face and is presumably wandering around. Might be in Numerica. We don't know. But I did love that little bit of dramatic irony of, like, someone shot her in the face. Oh, we need to get that jerk. That wasn't the word he used, but I was like, oh, baby, no.
Didn't they realize at one point that it was 10K and just
not say anything? She saw that it was 10K. He never saw her.
Doc realized it was 10K.
That's what I mean, yeah.
There are incarnations where he knew and not on the script side of things, and I think where it landed, you know, how it plays out is perfect.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Just that, like, let's not actually tell her that.
Objectively, 10K had some amazing moments that kind of harken back to his original introduction into the show in season one, where he's a survivalist. He was brought up in the woods by his dad, knowing all these tricks. And so you got to see some really cool moments with him. No words, a lot of visual imagery, but him MacGyvering the window out of the car and using it to listen to the things happening as a bounce sheet. And then the close-up shots. Ugh.
Because again, it makes sense that this very atmospheric, visually driven episode is directed by somebody who typically handles the cinematography for the series. It makes a lot of sense, and I feel like whenever we have a cinematographer being the director, I feel like we always go, "Man, like the shots in this episode are really good."
I don't think you're wrong. But the close-up of the bumblebee on the dandelions and the snake and the lizard, it was so great.
I feel like this is another one of those episodes where it's like, all right, go out there, get some B-roll, see you in a couple hours.
That's always the case.
Yeah. And just go nature it up for a bit.
Sure.
And they always come back with something really fantastic.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I think probably my favorite bit of framing was just the Michael Myers push, you know, getting back up from the background. I always really appreciate those in my horror movies.
Well, and we're watching this going, Henry Rollins turns to face the camera, and we're like, oh, the framing moved. Oh, the zombie's still in there. He's getting back up. He's getting back up. There he goes. There he goes. I know what that framing means.
Talking about 10K, though, I really like, and you were talking about how a lot of it harkened back to his character in season one. I think a lot of it says how far he's come as a character as well, because back then he had so much trouble connecting with people. And in this episode, we take a good chunk of time to talk about his relationship with Red and about how that connection has evolved in the years since everybody was kind of scattered to the wind. And what he's supposed to do now that she's not here. Like, do you hang on to hope? Do you just kind of write her off as gone so you move on? It's a very interesting conundrum. Again, when you have a system in place of like, if we get separated, this is what you do, and to have no sign of that, it's like, well, do I just hope she's okay and just didn't have a chance to leave a sign? Or
you leave a sign of your own and you do what you can.
There were whispers. We saw her in a couple shots. Like, she's there.
Oh, did I I'm miss just that? Saying.
I think I missed that.
I missed that. Oh, my gosh. Michelle, you're
seeing when things. He's listening on the glass, there's the animals, right. And then there's a whisper on the wind, and there's a blurry shot of a woman in red running through the woods. And then there's a zombie jump scare, and he smashes the glass on his head.
I got real distracted by the zombie jump scare.
Yeah, me too, which I think was the point.
Yeah. Go back and watch it. You're welcome.
This is why I need to... This is why...
That's why, like, I watch it twice.
This is why if I'm not watching something with subtitles, like, I miss stuff. Like, I like watching stuff with AfterBuzz with, like, the subtitles in the bottom has completely changed the way I watch regular shows. I miss so much if there aren't subtitles there.
Well, and it's great to have subtitles because if someone's talking off screen, like, if they're an important character, they have a name and then what they're saying. And if they're not an important character, it's just like soldier, student, man. I'm like, oh, yep.
What is this cheat sheet that you're talking about? You're getting the script. Is that
all right. And to be fair, I can't verify that it's red, but it's a blurry shot of a woman in a red cloak.
It's heavily
it looks
implied.
Like the red scarf. It's heavily implied that she is somewhere nearby.
Well, it's one of the things that you brought up earlier about, you know, going through this journey, not knowing what's going to happen next because you're trusting. You know, you're putting your faith in Warren, who's going to lead you on a journey she doesn't even know anything about, and you don't know where it's going to take you.
Yeah, we don't know what the destination is.
You don't even know where she's going, why she's going, what she's doing, what this reset-y thing is, and whatnot. And same thing with the characters that are disappeared. It's, you know, you're going through that same mystery that our heroes are going through. So, you know, hopefully we get some answers, you know, and hopefully the answers are good enough, you know, to keep going.
Gonna say, did they not talk at all on that helicopter ride over? Like, it was the creepy doctor and soldiers, so I feel like a debrief should have gone down.
I'm pretty sure they didn't, because nobody talks in front of Dr. Sunshine.
Well, I really appreciated that we had that scene with all of them at the top, because when the helicopter took off at the end of the last episode, we were like, who's flying the plane? Who's flying the helicopter?
If I'm here and you're here, then who's flying the plane? Someone, an NPC. Ah, gotcha.
So I very much liked that they showed that, like, yeah, we knew that there were groups of soldiers, like, doing stuff, but it was nice to see them, like, actually sneak off. So that was cool.
They didn't really sneak. They
so much just wander. Left.
And the other people did not give a crap.
Yeah, I kind of looked at that and said, they should be behind a tree or something.
Just blatantly walking away.
All right, we missed that, you know.
I like to be bold.
For me, Mr. Sunshine looks like the guy from Everlasting Gobstart with the Charlie and Chocolate
Factory. Yes!
And I always keep calling him Charlie, you know. So I know he has a real name, but
I called him Judge Doom last episode. Doom.
I don't remember his name.
I keep calling him Andy Warhol glasses, but you know, he also kind of looks a little like Danny Elfman when he wears the yellow glasses as well.
He's a very unique character. You know, that
he's creepy. Yeah.
Fantastically
he's,
terrifying.
He hasn't said a word, really. And,
no, he hasn't.
You know. It's just his clap.
When this show chooses to introduce a villain that doesn't speak a ton, it's, like, super unsettling. Like, ugh. Yeah, because the man didn't have a whole lot of dialogue when he was initially introduced. And we haven't heard much from this guy, too. And it's just one of those things where it's like, what's going on in this guy's head?
I mean, super unsettling is kind of the subtitle of this show.
It did. They did introduce the cannibals pretty early on.
Well, okay. No. Episode one, Zombaby kills a man. Like,
that's it.
That sums a lot of it up.
We're going to start off with that. Okay.
So we do have a couple other things that we need to tackle. We're running a little short on time. Do we have any final thoughts about this episode before we dive into some news and gossip and predictions?
It's another cinematography thing that I just appreciate, the Route 66 sign with the Z on it.
Yes! I love it so much!
Roll credits.
So powerful.
My wife looked at me after, she goes, really?
I love it.
Okay, but why not, though?
Cool.
But why not, though? This whole show is zombie road trip. That's the point.
I love it. When I saw it, I'm like, yeah, it's awesome.
I appreciated the hell out of that.
I had the biggest, stupidest smile on my face when she picked it up. And so I'm all about it.
I'm just a little worried about the fact that we're all heading east and Addie's presumably heading north. So this doesn't have a lot of overlap.
Yeah, it's...
So we'll see.
Especially if, like, the people who disappeared are in Numerica, or maybe disappeared because of Numerica, we don't know. Then the idea of them going east means they're going further and further away from where everyone was supposed to go or supposed to be. So, I don't know. We'll see.
I'm assuming everyone who disappeared that isn't a named character is just dead.
I mean, that's
It is
fair.
Really easy to slaughter NPCs.
All of the blends are in a fridge right now, so
they
I feel like
literally
that's fridged
and
them.
Henry Rollins is a name, but he didn't necessarily survive. Yeah.
He had a name and depth, and you know. He didn't survive.
Oh, I mean, like, by the dozens.
Okay.
You tend not to kill named characters by the dozens. You absolutely
However,
do that,
that
with...
Be...
Zombie
traumatic.
Bait number one.
That would be traumatic and powerful.
We saved that for season finale.
No. All right.
Anyway.
Guys, let's go ahead and dig into some news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Headphones are working now.
One fun thing that we want to talk about, it's not necessarily Z Nation related, but the Asylum is doing something really fun right now with Cinemark. Do you want to go ahead and tell our audience a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Every Thursday night at a selected Cinemark theater, about 76 of them nationwide, we show an Asylum movie. At 10:30 at night, it's kind of a late night thing. So please go to cinemark.com/asylum to find out what movie is next. The one this Thursday is Zombies, which one of my favorites that we put out at the studio. And it's what you think it is. It's zombie animals in a zoo. And it's very serious. Would you stop that?
Sorry.
This is really embarrassing.
So excited about
Zombies.
It.
Zombies.
And then every Thursday there's something new, unique. Some we just acquired that has that Asylum sensibility, and some are from our studios as well. And and sometimes we even have the Q&A with the film director that we post do a live feed on FaceTime.
That's awesome.
Facebook.
That's cool.
I mean, saw a little bit of. I actually went to go see a movie in Colorado when I was home for a while in a Cinemark and saw that reel for it, and there was some Z Nation in there.
I would imagine so. Yes, the teaser has from the filmmakers of from the Asylum, Sharknado, Z Nation, all that stuff. So yeah, it's a good time.
Zombies sounds like fun this week, and there's something new every week.
Yes, it's a new show. It plays just that one night. To the 100 theaters, and
Go 1 week, you go the following week, and you'll
get it's discounted tickets. It's like a $5 ticket. I think you can get the whole season for even less. If you go again online. It's a lot of fun, and I'll be if you're out here in Los Angeles, I'll be there this week at the Howard Hughes Cinemark.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah. Come on out. See ya.
Well, that's awesome. But I think we also wanted to talk a little bit about Z Nation on TV this year. Because a lot of people came to this show via Netflix. And I feel like a lot of people were drawn into it. And again, with the binge-watching culture, that like the way that's sort of changing TV, that brought a lot of people to it for seasons 2 and 3. But I feel like a lot of people are also waiting for the entire season to be done before they actually catch it. Now, did you have any thoughts on that you wanted to speak to?
Here's the thing. If we don't get the ratings, if we don't get the eyeballs when it goes on the Sci-Fi Channel on Friday nights, there won't be a season 5. So that's my exclusive to you. There will not be a season 5 if we don't pushed the ratings up. Numbers are down this year, so and yet I think it's the strongest season that we have. So I want more people to see it. So we need some evangelical Z Nation, you know, zombified audience fans to really go out there and push it to watch it, because we need those ratings to go higher so that we could tell you actually what happens when they go back east in season 5. I mean, we kind of answer some things, but, you know, come on. Season 5, that's what it's really at.
Yeah.
You know.
So if you are a Nielsen house, or if you know someone who's in a Nielsen house, or if you just like zombies, come on, guys. Come on.
We need those.
Have you heard the word of our Lord and Savior Murphy?
I mean, all analytics are important. Netflix numbers, Amazon
Absolutely.
Numbers, DVR numbers, all of those things are important.
We love our partners.
But and we say this all the time when we talk about our iTunes shout-outs and everything like that. Audience engagement and audience eyeballs
support.
When an event is actually happening, and very much audience support. That's how a show stays on the air,
right.
And that's how producers, that's how they know what they choose to keep on. It's how the producers know that people like the show that the network is putting on. So, guys,
right.
It's really important. Watch it on Friday nights when it airs and tweet all about it, live tweet it. I don't want to see any spoilers, but, guys, Z Nation needs you to do this. So, yeah, guys, we need that. And then after you watch the episode, go ahead and comment on iTunes and let us know what you thought.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And we might give you a shout-out on the show. Nothing new this week, but iTunes does take a couple days to update, so be sure to keep that in mind when you guys leave a comment. All right, let's go ahead and delve on into some predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV.
Sorry, David, we forgot to mention that the studio is
dead.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Hope you're cool with that.
Zombie ghosts.
Stroke.
So, okay. Yeah. I'm going to bring you back to that question. Guys, what's east?
Death.
Destruction.
The black rainbow. The reset.
Fire.
If the black rainbow is birds, I'm a freak out.
Like just a murder of crows?
Well, converging.
It's like that
Isn't
scene
the manta
from the
ray, the thing that didn't she
There
see
was
that?
A manta ray. She did
yeah.
see a manta ray.
So there you
it's
go.
It's like the
That's
scene from the new terrible mummy movie where it's just
oh
enough birds
God.
To take to
didn't
the plane.
Didn't see that movie.
Yeah, but it's in the previews and that's all that matters.
Don't reference a terrible movie then when you die. Okay.
There's not enough whiskey in the world to have made that movie good.
Ouch.
Anyway.
Ouch.
That's neither here nor there.
I was just, my one quick prediction is that Murphy is going to have to come to terms somehow with the fact that he's no longer relevant to the
yes.
situation.
Like,
I'm excited
to
see.
It's not about him anymore.
It's not about him. It doesn't matter if he goes with the group or stays. It's literally not about him.
And they can't use his blood for the cure anymore because
yeah.
it has contaminants in it.
Yep.
I like the idea of him being not relevant anymore, but Warren being the one to physically change and having her biology becoming the new fact. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Okay, guys. Well, I believe that means we're out of time. David, thank you so much again for coming on. We really
Hopefully
appreciate
I'll be
it.
Voted favorite next season.
We'll put up a poll.
Yeah. Thank you.
You are returning guest star champion. Thank you so much. Do you have any other projects that you can tell us about real quick?
Oh, goodness. No, that's you got me all on the Cinemark thing and watching Z Nation. And, yeah, that's a lot of my life right now.
Fantastic.
Right.
Where can people go if they want to keep up with you?
On Twitter, it's David M. Latt.
Well, again, cannot say thank you enough for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank
Looking
you.
Forward to what the rest of the season brings.
Can't wait to show you.
Michelle?
You can find me on Twitter at Michelle_Cullen.
I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is Kiaxet. If my shows didn't come back last week, they're all coming back this week. The one I have on my mind right now is Voltron because that is tonight in about an hour, 9 p.m. Show up. It's going to be awesome.
And I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I'm also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with 2 Ks. Be sure to check those out. Be sure to also check out Season 2 of The Shadow Radio Recreation, where I do the voice of Mark Lane. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you again, David, for coming on. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm
Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.